Greetings, everyone. It's time for the Reduced Shakespeare Radio Show.
Yes, the Reduced Shakespeare Radio Show, featuring the Reduced Shakespeare Company. My name is Reed Martin. I'm here with Austin Titchener and Adam Long.
I'm Adam Long. I'm here with Reed Martin and Austin Titchener.
I'm Austin Titchener. I'm here with Adam Long and Reed Martin.
That was Austin Titchener. I'm Reed Martin.
I'm Adam Long.
I'm Austin Titchener, and until the cows come home,
we are the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Oh, good Sir Austin.
Aye, Lord Adam.
Pray tell me, in sooth, what pastime shall we assail on this day?
My long-nosed friend, none other than those plays relating on Kings John, Henry, and Richard.
Richard?
Aye, verily.
So, thou common dog, didst thou disgorge thy glutton bosom of the royal Richard?
Dost thou call me dog?
Thou art very dog-like.
So said Lady Macbeth, who cried, out, out, damned spot.
Woof, woof, woof.
Get out of here, spot, get out.
Are you guys through?
No! Okay, we're through.
As you can probably tell, the team is certainly in a jocular mood today. They've been cacinating incessantly all afternoon, and the studio is festooned with Shakespearean finery. Spirits are high, and why should we not be merry? For today, we will be exploring William Shakespeare's histories, and that is certainly cause for merriment.
Mirth, frivolity, glee.
I know what merriment means.
Hey, we're doing the histories?
Of course, yeah.
Well, then what are we so excited about? I thought Shakespeare's histories were all about big, bloody, boring battles.
Au contraire, mon petit fromage. It'll be far from boring. In the next half hour, the Reduced Shakespeare Radio Show will make Shakespeare's histories come to life. Let's start off by defining our terms. What exactly do we mean by history, Reed?
Well, Austin, history is a walk down a mountain road, across the creek of memory, and through the storms of time.
That's history? I thought that was mud.
Well, Adam, I suppose you have a better definition of history.
Maybe as a matter of fact, you have a better
definition. I understand a word you're saying.
Well, I'm saying that, yes, I do, as a matter of fact, have a better definition of history, Reed, and it comes from my grandfather, who used to sit me on his knee and say, "Boy, history interprets the events of yesterday to justify the mess we're in today."
Well, your grandfather was very wise, Adam. This is exactly what Shakespeare did with his history plays. He was forced to disguise his true intent, and then gave us not the history of his country, but the history of his country as he saw it, which is, of course, the artist's prerogative. But to examine, for instance, his play Henry VIII as an accurate picture of the founder of the Church of England, instead of a thinly veiled allegory of despotic leadership, is to confuse fact with fiction, wake up, Adam, and the precise objectivity of historical method with the prejudiced passion of propaganda.
I didn't know you were illiterate.
I'm not. My parents were married.
Oh, man.
That's the spirit. Nonetheless, and notwithstanding the nattering nonsense of the foregoing, right now we are proud to present all 10 of
William Shakespeare's histories. Gongs, trumpets, heavy reverb.
That's so cool.
Yes, William Shakespeare's histories. 10 plays too factual to be called tragedies, too tragic to be called comedies. You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll kiss 10 bucks goodbye. We begin at the end with a bard's penultimate history,
Richard III.
And don't forget to listen for today's featured sound effect.
Today's featured sound effect is
Act One, in which Richard kills his brother Clarence.
Now is the winter of our discontent, made glorious summer by this son of York. But I, that am curtailed of fair proportion, deformed, unfinished, and so unfashionable that dogs bark at me as I halt by them, I am determined to prove a villain. Brother, good day. What means this armored guard?
His Majesty hath appointed to convey me to the tower.
Upon what cause?
Because my name is George!
Act Two of Richard III, in which King Edward dies of old age.
All hail, good King Edward.
My loyal subjects, my time with you is short, and I desire to make amends. Therefore, Hastings and Rivers, take each other's hands, swear your love. Wife, love Lord Hastings, let him kiss your hand. Dorset, embrace him. Hastings, love Lord Marquis. And you, Scarecrow, I think I'll miss you most of... Cough, cough, hack, splutter, croak.
I thought he'd never die.
Act 3 of Richard III, in which Richard, through cunning subterfuge, manages to secure the two princes in the tower, execute Rivers, Grey, and Vaughan at Pomfret, devise a cunning plot to have Hastings decapitated, and, cloistering himself in meditation, modestly accepts the Lord Mayor's offer of the English throne.
Oh, man, you just gave everything away that happens in the whole act. That's so uncool. I can't believe
it, give
it
away.
It,
that's called foreshadowing, Adam. It's a literary device. A foreshadowing, a mysterious hint of something to come.
Well, it's not too mysterious, is it? You just told everybody everything that's going to happen.
No, I place the upcoming events into an intellectual context in which the action of the play can be misunderstood on a deeper level.
Okay, whatever. But with...
Act 4 of Richard III, in which Richard kills babies.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to the graphic nature of the upcoming scene, we suggest that individuals who are squeamish or easily offended turn off their volume for the next 15 seconds of this program. I'm sorry, please forgive this interruption. I just wanted to point out that this is one of several instances in which Shakespeare gets history right. It is a well-documented fact that the princes were slain with a gas-powered chainsaw with an 18-inch revolving auger blade and 6-cylinder bicarbonated engine. Thank you.
Act 5 of Richard III, Judgment Day!
A horse! My kingdom for a horse!
I'm sorry, please excuse this interruption. I just wanted to assure you that there would be no more interruptions. Thank you.
God in your arms be praised, victorious friends. The day is ours. The bloody dog is dead. Now civil wounds are stopped. Peace lives again. That she may long live here, God say... Amen.
Oh, man, that was totally boring.
Adam, it's just because you don't understand the history of it.
Yeah, the context.
Listen, we'll talk you through it. Now, you see, Richard was connected to Plantagenets. The Plantagenets conquered all the Anglo-Saxons.
Henry II was the very first Plantagenet.
And he had two heirs to the throne.
The first was Richard called the Lionheart.
The second was John, who signed the Magna Carta.
His flunky was the Sheriff of Nottingham.
And Henry III was heir to the throne.
Dead kings, damn kings, now who's the heir to the throne?
Now first there was good King Edward I.
The next was Edward II.
And next came a king named
Edward II. Father of Richard II.
And now here's the War of the Roses.
Damn kings.
Gee, Dad, what was the War of the Roses?
Well, they call it the War of the Roses, son, but there weren't nothing rosy about it. It was North versus South, slave versus free, industrial versus...
Dad, wasn't that the Civil War?
Well, they called it the Civil War, but there weren't nothing civil about it. It was brother versus brother, sister against mother-in-law, the American Gladiators against the World Wrestling Federation. Now shut up, son, and let me learn you something.
Dead kings. Now here's the War of the Roses. So Richard II was murdered by Henry IV, and Henry IV was murdered by Henry V. Henry V was made into a movie, and Henry VI is the heir to the throne. Now of Henry VI, Shakespeare wrote 3 plays, but no one's ever seen them because they're boring.
Edward IV is not a play, but it's a gay pub.
And Edward V is the heir to the throne. But Edward V was murdered in the tower by his uncle Richard III, who was a hunchback, and he went to college at Notre Dame. And Henry VIII was a pop song by Herman and the Hermits.
I'm Henry VIII. Well, I'm sorry, but I still think it's uninteresting and stupid. I told you guys when we started writing this thing, I said I will not do dry, boring, vomitless Shakespeare for this program because it'll just turn people off. I mean, like when I was a kid in school, right, I used to sit there in class, and while we were supposed to be studying Shakespeare, I'd be looking out the window at all the kids playing ball, and I'd be saying to myself, why can't this Shakespeare stuff be more like sport?
Sport?
How?
Well, because sport is visceral, man. It's exciting to watch, you know? I mean, like, look at Shakespeare's histories, right? Okay, in the histories, you've got all these kings, right? And they're killing each other off. They're passing the throne from one generation to the next. Shakespeare's histories are exactly like American football, but you do it with a crown.
Hey, they are kind of similar, aren't they?
That's okay, guys, let's do it.
That's a great idea. Let's do it.
Come on, man. Switch the station.
Good afternoon.
afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to our live broadcast of the first annual Monarch Cup featuring Shakespeare's monarchs from King John to Henry VIII. If you're just joining us, I'm Brock Davenport, bringing you all the exciting play-by-play action. Joining me here in the broadcast booth is my partner since the 12th century, Dick Bungalow. Welcome aboard, Dick.
Thanks, Brock. It's certainly great to be here, and it is a beautiful day here at Wembley Stadium.
It certainly is, Dick. We'll be joined periodically by sporadic reports from our scattered colleague, Skippy Semi-Detached, down on the field. Say hi, Skippy.
Hi, Skippy.
Well, Dick, I'm here to tell you the first annual Monarch Cup promises to be a sport spectacular.
You're telling me, Brock. I can't tell you how excited I am. I'm beside myself.
No, I'm not.
Yes, I am.
Well, you've got good reason to be schizophrenic. The Monarch Cup is the mother of all sport competitions. It is the pinnacle.
The peak.
I know what pinnacle means.
Sorry?
The acme, the apex, the zenith. It would not be inaccurate to say that in this match there is no tomorrow. Sudden death here is not a cliche. It is a fact of life. Uneasy is the head that wears the crown.
A stitch in time saves nine. A rolling stone gathers no moss.
You can't have your cake and eat it too.
The game is just about ready to get underway, but before it does, let's cut to Skippy down on the field. Skippy, can you tell us the basics of how this game will work?
Sure, Dick. Through a series of intricately planned offensive and defensive strategies, each monarch will attempt to overcome intense opposition from all sides, fending off pretenders to the throne, while at the same time advancing his own position.
Skippy, can you simplify that for us?
Sure. The last king standing with the crown on wins. Back to you, Dick.
Thanks, Skippy.
You're welcome, Dick.
Over to you, Brock.
Thanks, Skippy, Dick. But who makes up this cavalcade of kings, this roll call of rulers, this menagerie of majesty, this mess of monarchs? I spoke to King Richard II earlier today on this very topic, and here's what he had to say.
Well, let me make one thing perfectly clear. I am not a crook, and I know nothing about the 17 and a half minute gap in the Watergate tapes. And furthermore, I'm not giving back my dog Checkers.
Obviously, that was not the Richard we wanted. We seem to be experiencing some tickety digger foggies. We were hoping to speak with the king. So we still seem to be having some problems in the control room. Can we... All right, let's take this opportunity to bring you a word from our sponsor.
Peccadillo.
And now this commercial message. We'll be right back.
Don't you wish... Darn it, Louise, I want a son! What's the matter with you? I'm warning you! Don't make me leave you!
Don't you wish...
I want a son!
Oh, but I don't wanna!
I don't care, Louise!
Is your wife failing to bear you a male heir? Having trouble getting a divorce? I know the feeling. Hi, I'm Henry VIII, and believe me, I understand marital difficulties. So if you need information on how to put a marriage out of its misery, call me, Henry Tudor, at 1-800-1-2-3-4-5-6. Don't lose your head over marital problems. Have your wife lose hers. Remember, that's Henry Tudor.
Don't you wish...
Henry Tudor, he was more of a four-door, wasn't he?
And we're back with our live coverage of the Monarch Cup here at Wembley Stadium. I think we finally uncrossed all the wires, and we are now ready to bring you that interview I recorded earlier with the king. Roll it.
He froze in fear. His testicles shriveled up between his legs as he watched the slimy horror slither towards him. Jaws drooling, open sores bubbling, and he knew he would never see Maine again.
I am very sorry, ladies and gentlemen. That was obviously Stephen King and not at all the king we were hoping to speak with. I don't know what the problem is. I mean, who do I have to sleep with to get the right interview played at the right time around here? I mean, I knew I had to deal with a certain amount of bungling British incompetence.
Brock is working out some minor kinks in the system, this seems to me to be a likely moment to familiarize our listeners with a couple of the kings who don't get the press coverage of the Henry Fives and the Richard Threes, but who will be out there in the trenches today usurping with the best of them. First is King John, ruler of England in the 12th century, and most renowned for signing the Magna Carta, or, as translated from the Latin, the Magnificent Carrot, which was not only a precursor to democracy throughout the world, but also a staple of rodents' diets throughout the ages and a root vegetable that enabled many an English soldier to see well on a darkened battlefield. King John is also known as the nemesis of the legendary Robin Hood, who, along with Maid Marian and Morgan Freeman, robbed from the rich and, with the help of Oliver Stone, gave to the Warren Commission. Skippy?
Thanks, Dick. I'm standing here with Henry VI. How the heck are you, Hank?
Quite good, actually.
Hank, now listen, you're the second of the lesser-known kings about whom Shakespeare wrote three plays.
That's right.
Now,
yeah.
What did you do to warrant such attention?
Well, nothing, actually.
Oh, yeah, you did nothing. Good on you, son. You're sort of the Dan Quayle of the 15th century,
then. Excuse me, actually, I did do one thing.
Well, what's that?
I went mad.
Way to go, Hank. And yet, it was because of your monumental mediocrity that the War of the Roses was allowed to bloom and flourish.
Ah, thank you.
And it's here that we really see Shakespeare's Shakespeare's power of imagination, he took a king, about which there is little to say, and he created three plays! It's wacky! But upon close examination of the text, it's easy to see that they were way ahead of their time. Here is an excerpt from an early recording of Henry VI, Part 3, Act 5, Scene 7.
Good king, let us retreat.
My lord, we cannot.
Why is that, my king?
We are waiting for Captain Gardeau.
I'm sorry, I just wanted to cut away from the histories as a football game thing for a moment because, I mean, although it is a fun idea, I thought we should devote a little time to some earnest analysis of the histories.
Good idea, Austin. Let's do it.
Good, all right. And to help us out with our in-depth analysis, we have a very special guest here in the studio with us. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a warm fuzzy to the internationally renowned Shakespearean scholar, Oprah Winfrey. It's a pleasure and a privilege to have you with us, Oprah.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Wow. Oprah, can I touch your garment?
Well, only if you don't tell Stedman.
I love you, Oprah. I've always loved you. I've always, like, totally
loved you.
All right, Adam, that's enough. Get
off
her now.
No, you don't understand, man.
Alone.
I have
Adam,
deep feelings
look, it's
for
okay.
her.
No, just leave the... Wow, good backhand.
Thank you.
Where am I?
You're in your own private little Idaho, Adam.
Ooh, neat.
Now, sit over there. Be good. Sorry about that, Oprah.
That's all right. It's the price one pays for celebrity.
It is indeed. Now, Oprah, everyone knows about your phenomenal success as a talk show host, as a producer, as an actress, even as a political activist. But tell me, how long have you been a Shakespearean scholar?
Actually, ever since I was a young girl. I would put on his plays for all my brothers and sisters.
And you'd corral the other youngsters into taking roles?
No, I play all the parts myself.
I see.
I mean, I come from a huge family. I think that's why I became an actor. As a kid, I was always trying to get attention. Shakespeare was the same way.
Shakespeare was black?
No, he came from a large family.
Fascinating. Share with us your insight into Shakespeare's histories.
Well, I suppose it's best to focus on one specific text and hope that the conclusions we draw would relate to the others. So let me stick with Richard III. Richard III was Shakespeare's first full-scale study of the character type who, like Tamburlaine, pits himself against society and against the heavens and for a time prevails. Richard delights in theatrical gestures and even in degrading forms of sensationalism, and in his quest for power is untouched by ideas of morality or conscience. So in that sense, you could say that Richard III was a yuppie.
Well, that deals with the text of Richard thematically, but how does it stack up stylistically?
Stylistically, it kicks butt. Alliteration, antithesis, parallelism, repetition, you name it, Richard's got it. Check out this passage. You cloudy princes and heart-sorrowing peers that bear this heavy mutual load of moan, now cheer each other in each other's love.
You're right, that does kick butt.
I told you, the different layers of style and meaning hit you like waves crashing on the shore.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean.
No, Adam, no, leave it alone.
No, Oprah's totally right, because waves, like all of Shakespeare's histories, are like sets of waves. Like, okay, you know when you're surfing, right, and you see a wave, and it's kind of wimpy, right? Well, that wave is Richard II, but just behind it, you think you see a bigger one, right? So you paddle out, and sure enough, mucho mama, Richard III, dude, cowabunga, and with the Henry plays, okay, in the Henry plays, just when you think you're going to get a tube, boom, it drops out from under you. I reckon Shakespeare's histories are like that. They leave me with sand in my shorts, but I keep going back for more.
Well said, dude.
Oprah, you may have noticed that this show has kind of a sports theme today. Do you play any sports?
Well, I used to play water polo, but my horse drowned.
Oh, that's really sad.
No, it was a joke.
Oh.
Now, Oprah...
You know, I don't think it's very funny to be cruel to animals.
Adam, shut up, or we're going to be cruel to you. Now, Oprah, I couldn't help but notice that you look much different here in the studio than you do on TV.
Well, yes, that's true.
Would you mind describing yourself to the people at home?
Well, I'm 6'2", 12.5 stone, Caucasian, and completely bald.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. And that's because Oprah Winfrey is not actually Oprah Winfrey, but our own Reed Martin Professional Impressionist.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I thought something was weird.
He was tough, he was black, and he was jealous as hell. Shakespeare's classic tale of lust and betrayal comes to the big screen with an all-star cast. John Ritter as Iago, Mary Lou Retton as Desdemona, and Mr. T as Othello, the Moor of Venice.
I pity the fool who messes with Desdemona.
Catch it with someone you trust.
Directed by Kenneth Branagh. Opens Friday at the Odeon Leicester Square and Lowest of the Low Cinema near you. Under 47, not admitted without parent.
Welcome back to the Monarch Cup pregame show. This is Brock Davenport, and I'm joined here, as always, by Dick Bungalow here in the booth and Skippy semi-detached somewhere down on the field.
Well, there he is.
What is he? Oh, my! Oh, no. He's chasing the mascot!
Not again!
Get him, Skippy! Oh!
Ouch! Skippy just ripped the mascot's head off!
Oh, that's gotta hurt. Let's go down there and see what he's up to. Skippy, what's going on down there?
Well, Brock, as you probably saw, the mascot looked a lot like William Shakespeare, except that his head was enormous. I mean, I'm talking really gigantic. So I checked chased this dude down, and acting on my reporter's intuition, I ripped his head off.
Can you describe it, Skippy?
Sure thing. It's got the familiar beard and mustache, high forehead, receding hairline, and this is strange, there's a large opening in the back.
What are you going to do now, Skippy?
I'm going in, Brock. I'm going into Shakespeare's head.
What did he say?
He said he's going into Shakespeare's head.
No, it's too dangerous. Tell him to turn back.
Did you hear that, Skippy? Get out of there.
It's okay, Brock. I'm already in the cranial cavity, and I'm moving towards the brain.
Skippy, you're a sports journalist, not a neurosurgeon.
But, Dick, if he can uncover the secret of the bard's genius, this could be the greatest journey of discovery in the history of literature.
What are you saying? You know as well as I that Skippy has the emotional maturity of a turtle. There's no way he can survive in Shakespeare's head.
Mission Control. This is Skippy. I'm moving towards the cerebral cortex. I'll attempt to maintain radio contact. Give me more gain.
More gain, Dick. Give him everything you've got.
Brock, the transmitters are overloading. They can't take it anymore.
Penetration of the cerebral cortex in 5, 4...
Skippy! Skippy, can you read me?
Brock, I've entered the mind of William Shakespeare. Oh, and Brock...
Yes, Skippy?
Tell Dick he would not have survived.
Hold up, Doc.
Can you describe your surroundings, Skippy?
Well, I'll try. I'm moving through the upper layer of the bard's mind. This seems to be the more superficial layer. It's where the comedies are stored, as well as chat-up lines and dirty limericks. I'm moving deeper now, into his more substantial works, histories, tragedies, sonnets. And now I'm like in the basement. There's some prose, a few more limericks, a knock-knock joke. Brock? Dick?
Yes, Skippy?
I see a tunnel ahead, and a bright light at the end of it.
Skippy, move away from the light. Do you hear me? Move away.
I'm being drawn in. I can't stop myself. Brock, Dick, help!
Skippy, where are you?
Brock, Dick, I'm here.
Where?
I've made it to the source of Shakespeare's genius, a luminous, transplendent realm of supranormal light, by Jove! This is the collective subconscious of Jung, the Parinirvana of Buddha, the transfiguration of Christ. It all exists here within the brain of this Elizabethan poet saint. My God, of course he's bald! It all makes perfect sense now. His scalp ejects its follicles in joyful homage to the archetypal Godhead.
Skippy, what are you saying?
Dick, here inside of Shakespeare's head, I have entered the realm of experience that transcends space and time. And I see a figure approaching me.
What is it?
It's a woman with honey brown skin. No, wait a minute. This is an episode of Baywatch.
Baywatch? Are you sure?
Yeah, definitely. It's the episode about the lifeguard exchange program.
Oh, that one.
That's
oh,
a good yeah. one. Wait a minute. You're telling us that Baywatch is at the core of Shakespeare's genius?
Yeah, eerie, isn't it? Wait. The image is transmogrifying. I see a radiant infant mewling and puking in iambic pentameter. Oh, my Lord! I'm looking into the face of God! Dick, Brock, God is speaking to me! God is speaking to me, and God is saying...
If you could hold that thought, Skippy, we need to pause here for a commercial break.
I'm here to tell you, if you're a sports fan like I am, you'll shell out money you don't have for things you don't need, as long as they bear the emblem of your favorite sports team. I know I would. That's why Reduced Records has put together Songs of Sport, an album of great sporting classics. It's got all your favorite athletes from today's Monarch Cup singing your favorite songs. Classic recordings like Henry VIII's lighthearted Goin' to the Chapel, King John's trailblazing Power to the People, and of course, Henry VI's awesome live recording of Inagata da Vida. Plus, you'll enjoy music from your favorite contemporary athletes. Now, how much would you expect to pay for these timeless sports memories? Wait, there's more. If we receive your order in less than 17 seconds, you'll receive absolutely free this collection of authentic reduced Shakespeare Company beer cans. Wow! Now how much would you pay? That's right, not a solitary thing. Send $47 million, in England that's £9.80, to the reduced Shakespeare Company care of this station. Album not available in stores. Offer void in countries starting with a vowel. Think globally, act locally. No means no.
Oh me, oh my, we're back, and the Monarch Cup is just about ready to begin. Skippy Semi-Detached is back up here in the booth with us.
Great to have you back, Skippy.
It's great to be here, Dick.
That was some report you gave us from inside of Shakespeare's head.
Thanks, Dick. Well, you know, when you're a football-stroke-Shakespearean sports journalist, you gotta go where the action is. Sometimes that means you're on the field, sometimes you're in the locker room, and sometimes you're at the right hand of God. It all goes with the turf.
Well, in the minute left before the actual game begins, let's talk about a king who's often overlooked, but I think you'll find that when you talk about heart. When you talk about competitiveness, when you talk about obscure, you're talking about Richard II.
Absolutely.
Only 10 years old when he inherited the throne from Edward III, this youngster out of Lancaster quickly demonstrated he was an arrogant whippersnapper when he stole land from his subjects because he believed the kings were appointed by God.
Yeah, but you know, Brock, that's the kind of spirit that wins ballgames.
Yes, sir, and it looks like the match is finally underway. The kings are lined up. Yes, and there's the gun. Oh, and it looks like they've killed Martin Luther King right off the bat, but the others are still out there battling, and the Monarch Cup is finally underway.
Okay, line them up. Let's get macho. 25, 42, Richard 3, Henry 6, parts 1, 2, 3,
hut! And the crown is snapped to Richard II, that well-spoken 14th century monarch. He's fading back to pass, looking for an heir downfield. Oh, but there's a heavy rush from King John!
Oh, my gross flesh sinks downward!
The crown is in the air, and Henry VI comes up with it!
Victory is mine!
Oh, but he's hit immediately by King John, that rarely performed player from the 12th century, and he's down. Wait, he's up again? No, he's... Look at that little monkey run! He's down for the third and last time! This could be the end of the War of the Roses cycle!
King John is in the clear.
My soul hath elbow room!
He's at the 35, the 30, the 25, the 20, the 15... Oh, he's poisoned on the 10-yard line, and it looks like he's out for the game. Replacing him now is number 72, King Lear.
Divide we our kingdom in three. Cordelia, you go long.
There's a penalty marker down. Fictional character on the field, Lear is disqualified, and he's obviously unhappy about it.
Hooky!
Oh, doctor! Neither side is happy about it. Oh, both benches are clearing. Oh, the referees are moving in now, trying to pull the monarchs apart, and for some reason there's a group of cops on the field, beating one of the kings senseless. Oh my God, and now the policemen are kicking him. They're whomping on him. I'm trying to see who the king is. Would you roll back the videotape? Let's look at that again in slow motion, and oh, it's Rodney King, and I don't believe it. The referee says it's not a penalty, it's a human rights violation. So, it's now the Tudor's crown on their own 20.
Lining up now is that father-son team of Henry IV and Prince Hal. Center snaps to the quarterback. Quarterback gives to the hunchback. Uh-oh, it looks like that limp is giving Richard III trouble again.
A horse, my kingdom for a horse!
There's a pile up on the field.
Fumble, and Henry VIII comes up with it. He's at the 20, the 15, the 10. He stops at the 5 to chop off his wife's head. And it's a touchdown for the Red Rose. Oh my, you gotta believe this is the beginning of a Tudor dynasty.
Henry V, Richard III, Ty's a babe, and Charles a turd. Go Fergie!
And that is the final gun, and the first annual Monarch Cup has come to a close.
And look at that! Thousands of red roses cascade all over the field as Henry VIII is escorted off the field by his children, Edward VI, Queens Mary and Elizabeth.
And trailed by the bodies of his six wives. Or is that his post-game banquet? It's hard to tell from up here.
Way to go, Skippy. Be sure to join us next year for the second annual Monarch Cup, featuring the Stuarts against the Hanovers.
The Scots versus the Germans. The traditional tossing the Kaiser should be particularly interesting.
I can't wait.
Well, those bells mean we're just about out of time. And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. William Shakespeare's histories in a nutshell. And what have we learned today, Adam?
I've learned that Shakespeare is as far above us on the evolutionary scale as we are above the amoeba.
Thank you for sharing, Austin.
Well, I've learned that barking like a dog releases endorphins. How about you, Reed?
Well, I've learned that some of the histories may not be Shakespeare's greatest work. Some of them might even be downright bad, but they're still better than cats.
Cats!
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 Well, ladies and gentlemen, so ends another episode of the Reduced Shakespeare Radio Show. We'll be back next week with more of the Bard. But until then, on behalf of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, this is Reed Martin saying...
Listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Radio Show, written and performed by Adam Long, Reed Martin, and Austin Titchener. Additional material by Jess Winfield, Daniel Singer, Dan McLaughlin, and Mark Sellen. Special thanks to Greg Moore. Original music was composed and performed by Nick Graham.